This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Just let me hear some of that rock and roll music. Any old way you choose it. It's got a backbeat, you can't lose it. Any old time you use it. It's gotta be rock and roll music. If you wanna dance with me. If you wanna dance with me. I have no kick against modern jazz. Unless they try to play it too darn fast. And change the beauty of the melody. Until it sounds just like a symphony. That's why I go for that rock and roll music. Any old way you choose it. It's got a backbeat, you can't lose it. Any old time you use it. It's gotta be rock and roll music. If you wanna dance with me.
Good morning, Chuck Berry there. That'll get you going, will it not? Good morning. Welcome to Freedom Works, the Paul Molloy Show. I am Paul Molloy at your service. And along with my buddy and partner, Big Ed Davis, thank you for joining us. It is Friday, July the 10th. In a few minutes, John Berlow of the Competitive Enterprise Institute will be here. He has penned a biography of George Washington that talks about how much of an entrepreneur and innovator that our first president really was. I think you'll be surprised if you don't know much about George Washington, so please stay tuned. And all the standard polls right now show Joe Biden leading President Trump by double digits, every one of them. But what do the Las Vegas oddmakers say? Where it really counts, where you got to put your money where your mouth is, okay? We're going to give you the odds from Las Vegas and discuss the results with the keeper of America's most trustworthy poll, by the way, the barber poll, Andrew Ceresi. So stay tuned for that a little later. And the Supreme Court says that almost half of Oklahoma is Native American land. So what does that mean when it comes to jurisdiction over crime? Do the Indians take over and send it to their courts? We're going to talk about that. Also, a Maryland man may be the first person to get the COVID-19 vaccine successfully. And we're going to talk about that. So we got a lot to talk about. And in our ultimate top 10, we're going to keep going with this. Why I got started on this, Ed, I don't know. But the top 10 worst movies of the fourth decade of the talkies. It really bores Ed to tears. But they are so bad that if you can go back and find them on DVD or something, you know, it might be worth it. Top 10 worst. Okay. So, Donald Trump apparently wants more stimulus checks sent out. His Treasury Secretary, Steve Mnuchin, said yesterday that Trump supports issuing another round of stimulus checks as part of a fourth virus relief package. And they're vowing to get this thing enacted by the end of the month. So do we need more government money sent our way at this point? We should be perhaps relying more on businesses and employment, maybe? Isn't that the way it's supposed to work? Aren't we about $24 trillion in debt? Of course, nobody cares anymore about that. We, you know, at that thing about $24 trillion, that's mentioned every once in a while, and then people move on as if it's just dust blowing away down the street, $24 trillion. So anyway, Mnuchin says we do support another round of economic impact payments and that we're discussing the criteria with the Senate. Well, we'll see where all of that goes. I wonder if the House is going to go along with it. In my opinion, hopefully the House will not go along with it. I don't think we need more checks. You know, I don't know how good the first round of stimulus checks went. I guess, like everybody else, I was happy to get a check. But it became something like, hey, that guy got a check. When am I getting my check? You know, where's mine? I'm not sure the government should be handing out money, even when we have a virus floating around. Now, I know times are different, and we got to be a little bit more innovative, and people have lost their jobs, understood. But I'm not so sure the federal government is the one that takes the lead. We've talked about this many times. Our forefathers tried to figure out a way of allowing each state to have more power than the federal government itself. But it is so hard to maintain that, right? So wouldn't the states do a better job in taking care of their people during this pandemic? I think they would. In the meantime, Trump today is going after the folks that don't want to open up the schools. He talked about virtual learning, which he says has, quote, proven to be terrible. Proven to be terrible, unquote. Amid his push to reopen schools across the country this fall, he also said, or suggested, that federal funding could be cut for schools if they don't open up. Well, that might force their hand, right? Of course, how does Trump stop the funding of the schools? Does he wave a magic wand there? Here's what he tweeted. Now that we've witnessed it on a large scale basis and firsthand, virtual learning proving to be terrible compared to school or on-campus learning, not even close. Schools must open in the fall. He said, if not open, why would the federal government give funding? It won't. Well, not so sure he can just, close the book on the checks going to the schools. However, I did hear, I know you're a Harvard graduate. Did you know that they are charging the same tuition, the same amount of money to do their courses virtually as they do if you physically came to the school? Isn't that horrible? I mean, you know how much it costs to go to Harvard?
I would assume that you'd still get the education you wanted, even though it was virtual now.
Are you kidding?
Oh, come really? On. What do you sit in a classroom and take notes? What's the difference between the teacher being on Zoom?
You think that the kids are actually sitting there?
Well, now that's on their part. Yes, that's what I'm saying. Yes, that's what I'm saying. What about the high school or the other kids? Do they have a way of monitoring if they're actually doing the work? And you can sure as hell cheat like hell on a test.
Exactly. And all of that. And they're not listening, and they're doing something else, and they're playing computer games.
Facebook.
What they're really doing. Now, if you've got a controlled, captured group of students in an auditorium or in a classroom, even if they're not listening, you got them there, and somehow, by osmosis or something, I think they learn more. I think that's true. And I think, I'm not saying that I got any answers about the safety of the people. I understand the problem.
Well, what's the difference? If you're in school, in the university, you don't have to go to class.
True.
I mean, you're just not going to pass.
You also don't pass. Well, you don't have to get a degree.
You don't have to go online, and you can just fail.
Yeah.
Okay.
You're going to spend all that money and not get a degree, especially at Harvard, where the degree means more than the actual education. You know that.
And then you're at home, you're eating mom's food, and she's washing your clothes for you, and it ought to be heaven.
Yeah, it's heaven, all right. But you ain't learning anything. Anyway. And you're a Harvard grad.
Yeah, right.
Okay. Let us take our break.
It'll be John Harvard University. I want to.
John Harvard U. It was a wonderful place.
Next to Billy Bob Votek.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, indeed. Anyway, we're going to take our break. When we come back, we're going to talk with John Burlow about perhaps the greatest president we ever had.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey guys, Andrew's Master Barber Shop is open for business. The best haircutter in Tampa Bay, standing ready to make you look like a million. But you'll need to call to grab a time that's right for you. So call Nicole at 733-3773. That's 733-3773. And then get ready for a treat. No waiting, beautiful, clean, and safe facilities. The best haircut you'll ever experience, and a great price.
You can't ask for more, guys. That's Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. Call 733-3773. That's 733-3773.
If you would like to become a wholesale buyer of the premium quality longevity product that you hear about right here on the Tantalk Radio Network for personal service, you can pick up the phone right now and call Lola at 727-441-3311. Again, that's Lola at 727-441-3311. Or for even faster service, log on to TantalkHealth.com. That's TantalkHealth.com. Here's to your health and longevity.
Hi, this is Jay Leno.
Hey, this is Ted Nugent.
Hi, everybody. This is David Hobbs.
Hi, this is Bob Varshu.
Hey, this is Danny the Count Coker.
Hey, this is comedian, author, and most importantly, vintage race car driver Adam Carolla.
Hi, this is Shirley Cha-Cha Muldowney.
I'm John Forrest.
Hey, this is Jack Roush.
And you're listening to Nostalgic Radio and Cars.
That's Nostalgic Radio and Cars with the most fascinating and legendary names in motorsports every Tuesday from 7 to 8 p.m. right here on the Tantalk Radio Network.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
We are back on a Friday. I'm delighted to have back John Berlow. John Berlow has just authored a book called George Washington, Entrepreneur: How Our Founding Fathers' Private Business Pursuits Changed America and the World. And as promised, John, you're back. We want to talk about your book, and I'll tell you, right now, what an interesting time. I know when you wrote the book, you never thought any of this might be occurring. But in Portland, George Washington's statue was toppled and vandalized. And we've come to this. And yet George Washington, if people knew more about him, maybe they would respect him even more than they do now, correct?
I believe so, yes.
So tell us a little bit, first of all, about what prompted you to write this piece about America's first president?
Well, I've always, like a lot, like most Americans, I've always respected George Washington, being the first major leader of a country to voluntarily give up power twice. I mean, that alone just set the course, you know, for our and other republics. But I didn't know that much about him, and he was sort of unrelatable, just kind of the face on the dollar who you respected, but you didn't feel like Jefferson and Franklin you could relate to. Then I heard about 10 years ago that Mount Vernon was rebuilding the whiskey distillery. And I'm like, I had no idea that Washington had a whiskey distillery doing such a, you know, such something like so fun like that. And then I read more and was like, learned about the flour mill he built, and mule breeding business was the first, one of the first mule breeders in America, is often even called, in addition to the father of our country, the father of the American mule, and the way he helped inventors and other things. And I thought, and I wrote articles about it, that this could be a book about the fascinating, self-educated, you know, didn't go to college. He didn't go to Harvard on or any college, online or otherwise, but read books and taught himself things, and in a way was as creative, as inventive as Franklin and Jefferson.
In fact, he might have been our most gifted president, right? I mean, he was a surveyor. He made a great deal of money, did he not? By the time he was president, he had accomplished quite a great deal. He's even considered the guy that helped win the Revolutionary War.
He certainly was, from a ragtag army with a Continental Army to winning that. But yes, he started out as a surveyor, and that, because he didn't inherit Mount Vernon, from his father. He would have to wait like another 15 years after his father died to come into full possession. His older brother did. He was, you know, the middle son and did not, you know, really inherit a whole lot. So he really had to start out in what I call the gig economy of the 18th century as a freelance surveyor, surveying different parts of land. But he learned things about the land that he would use on the battlefield, you know, how to study different types of land. He always loved map making and had map makers during the war. But also he would, you know, from the land he looked at, the undeveloped land, like in Virginia's Shenandoah Valley, he would buy acres of that with his wages and would sometimes ask for the land instead of his wages. So he was on his way to being a real estate entrepreneur, a speculator, you know, in his teens. And then he would later apply that same inventiveness after coming to Mount Vernon when he stopped growing tobacco because it said it harmed the soil and he couldn't differentiate the product, and grew wheat and ended up, you know, building a flour mill to refine the wheat, and then used a trademark, G. Washington, that he registered at the Fairfax County Courthouse on his wheat, and had like a trademark brand that was, you know, 100 years before somebody like H.J. Hines would do something similar, that would ship all throughout the colonies into the British West Indies and as well as Great Britain. So he set the stage, you know, for the modern entrepreneur.
Where did he find time to be president?
That is a very interesting question.
I mean, the guy was just like, can you imagine how little sleep this guy must have gotten? I mean, I'm looking at his accomplishments, and they're like from one to another. The guy was constantly in motion.
Right. He was very disciplined. Plus, I mean, putting aside the fact all the correspondence when he came home from the war, and just that artists would want to, you know, take his paint him, and, you know, and he would have to pose for sculptures, which, you know, you think sitting for hours for him, sitting is kind of hard work. But he recognized, you know, these are the artists and the inventors of the new nation. So he found the time. He was a very passionate yet very disciplined guy. He also found the time, even as a private citizen, to help early American inventors like James Rumsey, who is considered the co-inventor of the steamboat. When Washington met him in what is now Berkeley Springs, West Virginia, was Bath, Virginia at the time, he saw the boat move and wrote a letter of endorsement, and was able, Rumsey was able to use that to get state patents in the 1780s before the U.S. patent offices were created. So Washington, I mean, believed in technology, the power of invention. When he welcomed, like, say, French hot air balloonists, which had started in the 1780s, and said, you know, one day we may be able to travel by, quote, flying through the air.
Wow. Wow. We're talking with John Berlow. He has penned a piece on, I'll tell you, the more I hear about George Washington, the more I'm beginning to think he was not only our first president, he might have been our greatest. You know, it's always Lincoln and Washington, or Washington and Lincoln, you know, when they do these polls, as if we should know. But George Washington, he's kind of like a Da Vinci. Da Vinci was a multi-talented person. I'm starting to think that George Washington, there's just something about his natural, intelligence and abilities. Why is it, let me ask you this, John. John, by the way, is a senior fellow at the Competitive Enterprise Institute. And this great book, by the way, has it now come out, or is it coming out in the next?
Yes, George Washington Entrepreneur, or Everywhere Where Books Are Available.
Excellent.
In fact, it has been number one at the colonial period history on Amazon. Was in the top 1,000 books on Amazon last week.
Wonderful.
So, but it's available at any book site, George Washington Entrepreneur.
So many, in many cases, maybe timing is good, because George Washington indeed is being, you know, is being looked at. But here's my question. Was it something in the water that made so many great people come together at the same time? I'm thinking George Washington, Thomas Jefferson, Benjamin Franklin, James Madison. These people would be considered great in any period of time, but yet they were all together, collected around, forming this country. What? That's almost providential. I don't know. I just wanted to get your thought on that.
Well, it certainly was. Washington used the term "the invisible hand of providence" in his first inaugural address, and which is not inconsistent with Adam Smith's "invisible hand, which moves forward capitalism." And we know Washington; he had a lot of great intelligence and natural ability. But one of the things that historians have now discovered is that Washington, even though he never went to college, his family couldn't afford college after his father died, so he didn't have the advantages that, say, Jefferson or some others did. But he read. He read constantly. He read books like Adam Smith's Wealth of Nations, books on religion, political philosophy, as well as books just on how to be a good horseman and how to improve agriculture. So he was a reader, and he learned from reading as well as experience, and as well as having great natural abilities.
Yeah. And now we come to the cancel culture. And George Washington and Thomas Jefferson and you name it, Christopher Columbus, they're all part of the group that need to be kind of written out of history somehow. I mean, it's an absolute. It's Orwellianly stupid, if I can try and say that. You know, I just want to get your thought about all that.
It really is. You know, no man has ever existed who's who's the perfect man, and you know, George Washington, you know, like everyone else, had flaws, but he did. Well, slavery preceded him. He grew up in slavery, where it seemed to be the natural order, not just in America, but in a lot of places in the world. Yet he came to see that it was an evil system and did what he could to minimize its evils. You can argue he didn't do everything he could. He spoke out against it as early as 1774 with the Fairfax Resolves, which tried to get, just before the colonies declared their independence, Great Britain to end the slave trade, calling it cruel and unnatural. Washington co-signed that with George Mason, and then had other Virginia delegates sign that. He would do things like refuse to break up slave families, and he would write in his letters that he opposed it and wanted to see it ended. And people would say, people are now saying, well, what? Well, those are just his letters. It wasn't public. I mean, but Washington knew his letters would be published in his lifetime. But the last greatest act he did was, he was the only founding father who had slaves to free all of his slaves in his will. He freed them upon when Martha died, and then Martha freed them a year later, when she was alive, also provide for their old age from Mount Vernon, which Mount Vernon was paying until his heirs were paying until the 1830s, as well as provide for their education. So he was much better than his era, and bettered his era on that too, and a lot of other things. In contrast to some people like, you know, the great statist, statist Woodrow Wilson, who would resegregate the federal government and showed, you know, a pro Ku Klux Klan movie, Birth of a Nation, in the White House. So Washington was better than his. That's one of the questions asked. Were you better than your era? Washington was much better. And also the fact that he championed the ethnic minorities of the time, like Jews and Irish Catholics.
Wow. You know, he really does come out. I mean, the more you learn about this guy, the more impressed you are. So, what did he accomplish? You know, yes, he was the first president. First of all, John, how many years did he serve? Did he serve like two terms? And secondly, are there any specific accomplishments other than he was the first president? And he kind of set the tone. Was there anything he did as president in that capacity to talk about?
Well, I'd say serving two terms as president is itself an accomplishment. That he voluntarily left, power. He also set the precedent. The cabinet was not in the Constitution. There were department heads, but having them meet and air grievances was not in the Constitution. But yet he was the one who sort of got Jefferson and Hamilton together to all speak. That's a tradition that continues to the current president. And I would say the creation of the patent office, and Washington, in those days, the president personally signed patents. So Washington signed the patent for James Rumsey and John Fitch to have the steamboat and other things, and setting up, you know, America as a nation of inventors, praising in his first statement to Congress that, you know, we welcome inventors from other lands and we want to develop the talent here. That was a time when Professor Deirdre McCloskey was talking about that in a talk at CEI, that many inventors were viewed as crackpots. It was not yet, you know, the age of Thomas Edison, where we worshipped inventors, but Washington set the stage for the age of Edison, where America would encourage inventors. So, yeah, a lot of things. I mean, put us on sure footing, you know, say with Great Britain, with the Jay Treaty and trade there, built up some of our defenses. But yes, having the system where we would welcome invention and innovation with patents and other things was certainly one of his biggest accomplishments, as well as just serving for two terms.
You know, I'd like to have been a fly on the wall his very first day as president. I just wonder what he was like. I wonder how nervous he might have been. It's like, well, no one's done this before, so whatever I do, I'm setting the precedent for doing it, you know? I wonder if that crossed his mind, you know, his brilliant mind. Or if he just got like anything else he did, he just said, okay, you know, I went to the, you know, in the Revolutionary War, we won that war, so maybe this was just one more step. Maybe he didn't even realize how big, how important it was that he was the first president, because, you know, maybe in 5 years the thing would have been wiped out, right?
I think he realized that. If you read like his inaugural address, when he talks about, you know, the invisible hand of Providence and how it was such an extraordinary moment, I think he realized that also, that he wanted to get like a, he made sure to get a suit, like, say, from America to show that he was wearing there to showcase to showcase, you know, American entrepreneurship. And I think he very much did, you know, realize what he did. I mean, he saved his and meticulously kept his notes from the time he was 14, so he may have known, you know, from, you know, being a teenager that he was something special or could be, and just plan, you know, was following a divine plan. So yeah, I think he was conscious, yet at the same time he didn't let it get to him. Yeah. He just did what he could.
Wow. Well, John Berlow, your book is George Washington, Entrepreneur, How Our Founding Fathers' Private Business Pursuits Changed America and the World. It came out June the 30th. It's in hardcover. You can get it on Amazon, and I guess, is it a Kindle book as well, or what's going
on? Yes, in every format and everywhere books are sold. Kindle, audio, everything.
I tell you what, I couldn't think of a more interesting person to write about the George Washington. Thank you so much, John.
Thank you so much for having me, Paul. Much more interesting than I thought.
Oh, wow. Really, indeed. All right. John Berlow. Boy, oh, boy, I'm going to read that book. I'm going to look for it and get it. I think that would be so interesting about George Washington. And here we got all these idiots running around trying to topple his statue. Mindless people that don't know the first thing.
But they don't mind George Washington the money.
No.
That's okay.
No, that's okay. They'll keep that. They won't topple that. They won't throw that into the harbor. They won't throw that into the harbor. You are right, sir. All right. We're going to take our break. When we come back, you know, all the polls are showing Biden ahead by double digits over Trump. What do the Las Vegas odd makers say, where it really counts? We'll talk with Andrew Ceresi all about it.
To see that you were meant for me, I want your loving, yes, sirree.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey guys, Andrew's Master Barber Shop is open for business. The best haircutter in Tampa Bay, standing ready to make you look like a million. But you'll need to call to grab a time that's right for you. So call Nicole at 733-3773. That's 733-3773. And then get ready for a treat. No waiting, beautiful, clean, and safe facilities. The best haircut you'll ever experience, and a great price. You can't ask for more, guys. That's Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcash Plaza in Dunedin. Call 733-3773. That's 733-3773.
It's a beautiful morning.
Hi, I'm Paul Allen, and I'm the host of Good Morning Clearwater. We are found right here on the Tantalk Network, 1340 AM and 106.1 FM, Monday through Friday, 8 AM to 10 AM. We will concentrate on Pinellas County and focus on Clearwater and Clearwater Beach. Weather, traffic, local and national current events, sports, trivia contests, and plenty of giveaways. We want to show the world why Clearwater Beach was voted number one beach in America. Listen up every Monday through Friday, 8 AM to 10 AM to Good Morning Clearwater.
Are you a writer, inventor? Do you have questions about your intellectual property rights? Well, tune in every Tuesday and Thursday morning at 11 o'clock for Joy on Paper. Once a month, I will have a special guest, the writer's legal eagle, Bill Larson of Larson & Larson, who can answer your questions. Protect your valuable work. Email me your questions to patsy.radio@gmail.com and then listen in every Tuesday and Thursday at 11 a.m. right here on Tampa Bay's Tantalk Radio Network. That's patsy.radio@gmail.com.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey, we're back on a Friday. And we move along in 2020. You know, all of the polls, no matter what poll you're listening to or watching or reading or whatever, seem to indicate Joe Biden right now has like a double-digit lead over Donald Trump, okay? And a lot of people go, well, I don't buy that, and even if I do buy it, it's way too early. So got to talking with the master barber, Andrew, and we started talking about what do the odds makers, the ones, you know, where you got to put your money where your mouth is, what do the Las Vegas odd makers think about it? So, Andrew, I took you up on that. I went and I looked online at the betting odds right now for the presidential race. So now,
what do you get?
Well, let me ask you what you think first. Then I'm going to go ahead and I'm going to read you what I found. Do you think that the Las Vegas odds makers would tend to, at this point, figure that Donald Trump is the favorite? Would they take money on that, do you think?
Yep. I would say he's the favorite, Paul.
Okay. Well, here's the deal. And this is from the Las Vegas Review-Journal, by the way. And this was in June, but we'll also update it. They say at that time, for the first time, Joe Biden has overtaken Donald Trump as the betting favorite to win the 2020 election. Now, this past Thursday, you can't technically vote. Bet in Las Vegas on the presidential race. You can bet overseas, but here are the three betting services that I found in Las Vegas. Even though you can't directly bet with them, Bookies.com, Bovada, and Bet Online. Bookies.com has Biden -125 to Trump +134. Now, in this case, a minus is a positive for that particular person. So that means that Biden is favored in that one. Same thing with Bovada. In that one, Biden is -150 to Trump +135. And in Bet Online, Biden is -160 to Trump's 130, which is even further odds. So all of them are favoring Biden at this time to win the presidential race. As of July the 7th, general election odds, it says here, as of July 7th, general election odds were stable. Donald Trump remains a significant underdog at 125 to plus to win a second term in office, while Joe Biden is a -134 favorite. So right now, Las Vegas does go with Biden. So I guess it's unanimous. What do you think?
Well, Paul, if I could place a bet on it, I would place it with Trump, and I would put money on Trump even with those odds, Paul.
Right.
There's no question about it.
Yeah, and I believe you. I know you would. So I got some good news for you. Despite those polls, we went to find a guy that has predicted correctly five out of the past six elections, which is pretty good considering how close some of these were.
Yep.
Five out of the last six elections, that goes back to 1996, and every single election but two in the past 108 years. This guy's,
that's right. They got him at 92% winning.
91%. It says here, the guy's name is Helmut Norpeth. He is a Stony Brook University professor, and he's doubling down on what he calls his primary model. And the primary model gives Trump a 91% chance of winning. And Norpeth said that this model gets it right for 25 of the 27 elections since 1912. That's pretty impressive to me.
All right. Now, Paul, now your next assignment is find out where we can place the bet overseas. We can make some money.
Yeah. Listen, I'm betting on Trump. I think when all of the smoke clears, no matter what they're trying to do to him, and they're trying to do all kinds of things to him, I think people are going to realize what he's doing is working. Go ahead.
I'm going to tell you what I'm going to predict going to happen probably next week or the week after.
Okay.
You know how they got Ghislaine Maxwell there in prison? They're moving her to the New York Penitentiary.
And she's wearing such nice paper clothing.
That's right. Now, I'm predicting that she's still alive for one reason. Mm-hmm. If you think about this, you got Bill Clinton. He's 80 years old, right?
He's 73. Go ahead.
73. Yeah. Whatever. He looks like he's 85. But anyway.
Yes.
Okay, Bill Clinton's got nothing to lose if she opens her mouth. Yeah, Bill Clinton was there. He had a good old time. He got nothing to lose. They ain't going to put Bill Clinton in jail. Bill Clinton's not running for nothing. He's got millions in the bank. He could care less. Okay? Mm-hmm. You know nobody cares about Prince Andrew.
Mm-hmm.
They're keeping her alive because she's going to try to trap Trump in this thing.
Oh, you think Trump's involved?
Well, I don't think he's involved at all, but I believe that they're going to try to implicate him.
Yeah, I misspoke. I meant you think that there's a conspiracy deal with Trump being involved in this. Yeah.
Otherwise, she'd be gone. But
wow.
You see, the people that she can implicate, there's some high-end people, but they're nothing of importance. Well, they're not running for the president. They're not trying to get rid of him. They could care less.
Well, if they were able to implicate, as an example, Bill Clinton in some scandal over there, underage relationships and the like, mm-hmm. they'd send him to prison, wouldn't they?
Oh, he's got as much chance of going to prison as I got of being the Pope.
Are you going to go to Italy and have a chance at being the Pope?
That's what I'm saying.
I love it.
He's got as much of a chance of that happening. And what would happen if they implicated Barack Obama? Absolutely nothing.
No, wait a second. I'm just trying to get used to Pope Andrew. I like it. It rolls off my tongue. You look good in white.
There you go,
okay,
buddy.
So there's no chance of that. And I tend to agree with you. Now, we've had some Supreme Court rulings come down. Now, some people say it's bad for Trump, but the more I look at it,
it's better for Trump.
It might be better.
Can't get a hold of nothing. That's right.
Yeah, there's two things going on. One, in New York State, the Attorney General is trying to get his claws on Trump's records. And then you got the House in Washington trying to get their mitts on Trump's records. And basically, from what I see, the people in New York have a shot at getting it if they've got some sort of a criminal deal going on, a case that they're checking into. But the people in Washington, in the long run, I don't think they can get their hands on tax records.
No, they shouldn't be able to.
Yeah, if it's just a witch hunt and you don't have anything concrete, why would they allow it? So that's kind of what I see it as. What do you think?
Well, you know what I got to say, Paul? If Pelosi and Schumer and all those people want Trump's tax records, I say we got to see all theirs.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, and I heard a very interesting comment. It was on C-SPAN this morning. A guy called in. He said, if they think that Trump or the president's tax records are so important, then pass a law. If that's such a big deal that you got to show your tax records, pass a law. We don't have a law. Why does he have to show them? I thought, you know, he's right. There's no law that said you have to show them. Why should he show them? Why should he? I mean, if you wanted to see my tax records, all I have to say is, no, it's mine.
That's right.
Of course, in your case, if I asked to see yours, I'd demand them.
It's amazing, yeah. Paul. It's amazing what's going on. Like I said, I believe that's going to happen next week. You know, I'm so tired of hearing on the news, COVID, 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 Trump, COVID, Black Lives Matters, COVID, Trump, Black Lives Matters. That's all you hear, Paul. What's going on in the world besides this?
I know. And there is a lot going on. What do you think about the school issue?
I think the kids need to go back to school and get this thing going, period. Mm-hmm. We need to start there. They got to go back to school. Look, these kids got problems as it is with socializing with other people. To keep them out of school more, they're not socializing with nothing but their computer. It's ridiculous.
You make a good point, because they've been burying their heads in these little iPads and the like, even when they go to school. And if they're not going to school, all of a sudden, I think you're right. I mean, it's like it's
they
just cutting
no
themselves
social
off.
Skills, so, Paul. No social skills whatsoever.
Exactly,
and,
right.
They're lacking them as it is. And you do this, they're going to have none whatsoever. And you know, it amazes me when you see these mothers on television. Oh, we can't let them go back. This is terrible. This is devastating. What the heck are they going to do when something really happens?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, look at the death rate. I'm sorry, Paul. Out of 23 million people, there's 4,000 people dead in Florida. The numbers don't jive to me. I'm sorry.
Yeah,
I don't care if 20 million people get it. If it's all 4,000 die, what happened here?
Yeah, how many died from heart attacks in Florida of the 21 million in our state during that same period? I mean, I bet you more died from heart attacks.
Oh, but, hey, Paul, I imagine people that died of heart attacks. I have known somebody that went to one of the drive-up test things, right?
Mm-hmm.
It was one of my customers. He says, we went up there and we got all signed up. He goes, we were waiting in line for an hour, still didn't get called. We just said, the hell with this, and went home. And he says, and a week and a half later, they got test results saying they were positive, and they were never tested.
And they were never tested. So the whole thing's a joke.
Yeah, this is all a sham to me, Paul. And anybody that falls for it is a fool. I really believe
so. Here's some good news on that front, by the way. A Maryland man believes he may be one of the first people to be successfully vaccinated against the virus. He participated in a trial that's reported promising early results in producing antibodies. He's a graduate immunology, immuno,
immunology student, so he probably knows what he's talking about.
You know, Paul, I was talking with my wife the other night, mm-hmm. and they were saying that, oh, this is airborne, and it can float for 20 feet, and this and that. And I said, you know, I said, if this thing is airborne, why aren't they loading up the airplanes with something and just spraying the atmosphere like they do? Okay, oh. You get the mosquito trucks. They spray for the mosquitoes that are airborne. And then last night, what do I see on the news at 6 o'clock? There's some guy that has a mosquito spraying business, and he is spraying his whole town with hydrogen peroxide.
You mean that hydrochloride? Is that what you mean, not hydrogen peroxide?
No, it might have been hydrochloride.
The thing that Trump is promoting, you mean?
They're missing. I don't think, okay. I don't know. No, I
hydrogen
believe
peroxide?
Hydrogen peroxide, yes. And they're saying that this is killing the airborne virus. So the guy's doing his whole town out of his whole pocket. He's paying for it himself to do it. And he's misting all the neighborhoods at nighttime. It was on the news last night on Channel 13.
Wow.
You might be able to look it up. And it makes sense to me, Paul.
Yeah.
It makes sense. If it's airborne, come on, spray Lysol. They just put on the news that Lysol definitely kills the virus. Okay?
Yeah.
It was on there. They had the special Lysol. It guaranteed it's going to kill the corona. Well, you know what? Get these mosquito sprayers out and start spraying the air.
You know, I remember the mosquito sprayers from years back. I often wondered if they really did a good job. You know, all I knew was that the stuff smelled terrible and stay away from the truck as it went rolling down the street. But maybe that's an idea, you know? Maybe that's an idea.
Like I say, look, if you can pull up last night's channel, it was the 6 o'clock news, I believe.
Yeah.
And they had this guy on. I started cracking up. I looked at my wife and said, listen, I should have brought this idea up a long time ago. And I'm surprised nobody's thought about this.
Yeah. Wow.
Okay, instead of the mask. They're just promoting this, Paul, to see how many people, how long it takes to break the country down.
Wow.
And the people that are listening, I mean, I get amazed at the people inside their car by themselves with a mask on.
Yeah, I've seen that too, and I wonder, what do you got the mask on for, unless you're going to get right out and, you're going into a place you just don't want to be.
They're driving down the road with it on.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's ridiculous.
Well, I'm not so sure that the mask isn't a good idea. I don't think it hurts anybody to wear a mask when you go into the store.
I can tell you it drives me crazy.
Yeah, no, it drives me crazy too, but I can kind of understand the mask. Yeah, it's one more step. I don't think that it's totally useless. I mean, that's just my thought. You know, I understand it. Do I necessarily, would I do it? I don't know, but I understand it. That's what I'm trying to say.
Well, let me ask you this.
Yeah.
Out of 23 million people, 4,000 have died since April.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see any purpose of a mask, unless you just don't want to get the flu and get the symptoms. If it helps, that's fine. But I'm gambling on it, that I'm not going to die from it.
Well, yeah.
And I'm not running and hiding from it.
Mm-hmm.
Well, okay, I'm going about my everyday life.
Yes, you are, and that's great. Hey, listen, I respect it. And I just think this is good news about this vaccine guy. Let's keep our fingers crossed. We can get past all of this and return to a normal life. Let's do it, right?
I mean, look at they were talking. You hear the conspiracy that they're putting the airplanes up in the air, spraying aluminum chloride and this and that, and you see all the streaks. Well, you know what? Load them up with Lysol.
Good idea.
Get the crop dusters where they can fly low and just, spray everything.
Well, before they do that, may I go and buy some stock in Lysol?
There you go. I believe that's Kimberly Clark, the same ones that make the... That's Johnson & Johnson. My mistake.
Johnson & Johnson. All right.
That's Johnson & Johnson. You need to go buy stock in Johnson & Johnson. What amazes me that they don't come up with these ideas, and here's some old-time guy that sprayed mosquitoes. Hey, it's airborne. Let's take care of it.
Yeah. Well, we're going to figure this out. I absolutely know we will. We just have to keep kind of marching forward on this. Andrew, thank you so very much. We will be talking with you again next week.
You got it, Paul. And remember, my money's on Trump.
Your money's on Trump, and I think he's going to do it, too. We got some time between now and then.
There's no question about it, Paul. This country's in turmoil. Yeah. And then I just heard that Ed was talking about the St. Pete Pier. He shocked me. But anyway, that's another topic.
The St. Pete Pier?
Yeah, he said there was a fight out on the pier last night, and the protesters were there causing problems. It's a shame.
Wow.
It's a shame.
Well, I'm going to have to look into that one myself. Okay, my friend. Thank you.
All right, buddy. Take care.
You too. Bye-bye. There he goes. the master barber himself. Andrew, all right, we're going to take our final break. When we come back, among other things, Tulsa and Oklahoma, half of Oklahoma, Native American land. What does that mean when it comes to crime?
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Hey guys, Andrew's Master Barber Shop is open for business. The best haircutter in Tampa Bay, standing ready to make you look like a million. But you'll need to call to grab a time that's right for you. So call Nicole at 733-3773. That's 733-3773. And then get ready for a treat. No waiting. Beautiful, clean, and safe facilities. The best haircut you'll ever experience, and a great price. You can't ask for more, guys. That's Andrew's Master Barbershop in the Overcast Plaza in Dunedin. Call 733-3773. That's 733-3773.
Are you looking for some great restaurants? For some great wines? Where are the great chefs? Listen to Dine Out Radio Herd every Wednesday on the Tantalk Radio Network. 12 to 1 p.m., we'll tell you where all the great events are. We'll have Food and Wine Magazine and Bon Appetit Magazine. We'll have their editors and writers on each month. And maybe we'll throw in a couple surprises. Check out the website, diningoutradio.com. My bridge is all...
Hey, everybody, this is Pastor Marcia McAllister from Beacon of Hope Ministries. We want you to join us on Sunday afternoons at 3 o'clock on this radio station for our two-hour show, talking to you about the Word of God, giving you great contemporary music, some lively chat, and just some food for thought. You'll be encouraged to know how very much God loves you and how He has a plan for your life. Join us this coming Sunday at 3 o'clock on Living the Good Life.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
You shake my nerves and you rattle my brain. Too much of love drives a man insane. You broke my will, but what a thrill. Goodness gracious, great balls of fire.
All right, we are back for the last portion of our show, and this I find very interesting. I used to live as a little boy in Oklahoma, and in fact in Tulsa. Well, the Supreme Court ruled yesterday that about half the land in Oklahoma is really run and owned by the Native Americans. It's a reservation territory. Now, this will have major consequences on criminal and civil cases. It was a 5-4 decision. Gorsuch, Sotomayor, Ginsburg, Kagan, and Breyer were in the majority. Roberts, Kavanaugh, Alito, and Clarence Thomas dissented. Basically, what this means is that they have, meaning Native Americans, have the rights to run their governments on tribal grounds, including when a crime is committed. And here is what, in dissent, John Roberts said. He said, this will undermine numerous convictions obtained by the state, as well as the state's ability to prosecute serious crimes. And so what they're going to do is when a crime is committed in those portions of Oklahoma, they are going to, instead of having the state take care of it, they're going to immediately send that up to the next level, which is a federal level, where it will be handled, not at a state level. But it's going to be interesting to see how they handle the whole thing. We'll kind of follow that. But a very interesting decision. All right, Ed.
You ever been around a place that's run by the reservation, the Cherokees or whatever?
The only thing, you know, when I've gone to one of those casinos, what have you?
Yeah, North Carolina, in Cherokee, North Carolina.
Okay.
It is run by the tribe or whatever. And yeah. I'll tell you what, they don't play around.
Don't they?
Oh,
so in other words, justice is swift?
Yes, very swift.
Well, maybe that's good.
Yeah, they don't believe in putting you in jail for 4 or 5 months waiting for trial. They put you on trial right away.
You know, now that I think about it, that's a good idea. Quick justice. Yeah,
and they have a no-tolerance law. You're caught drinking underage, you go to jail. That's it.
Yeah.
And I've seen it. One kid was drinking, he was 19, and put him in jail. Right away, handcuffed him. Like, we have zero tolerance.
You know, it'll be interesting, and we got to run on this quickly, but If a non-Indian or a non-Native American commits a crime in a portion of Oklahoma on reservation territory,
their laws.
He's going to be tried by a group of Native Americans.
It's their laws.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay. Time for our top 10. We got to move quickly on this one. This is the top 10 worst movies. You might call it Phase 4, the fourth decade after the talkies. So here we go. Number 1959. The worst movie ever made. Plan 9 from Outer Space. Ever hear of it, Ed? It was the worst movie ever made. Bela Lugosi was in it. The epicenter of camp. It's so bad, it's good. It practically invented its own genre of so bad, it's good movies. Okay. Lugosi only appears in the movie because he died while filming another movie. They actually just stuck old Lugosi things inside of it. All right. 1960. The Sinister Urge. Shot within a four-day period. Another Ed Wood movie. A pair of cops who are out to find the psychopath who kills women in a skin flick trade. It ends with Ed Wood himself making a cameo in drag. That's how good it was. 1961, The Beast of Yucca Flats. The star Tor Johnson was a big guy that was in a lot of Ed Wood movies. I think this is another Ed Wood movie. That's how bad Ed Wood movies were. Tor stumbles into a nuclear testing site where a bomb's been detonated, doesn't kill him, transforms him into a beast, and away he goes, wandering around, big, heavy guy, and before dying, he grabs a rabbit and nuzzles it. All right, 1962. EGA. EGAH. You know who starred in it? Richard Kiel. You know who that guy was? He played the huge guy that always chased James Bond. Remember Jaws?
Yeah, that's
who Richard Kiel was.
Okay.
It's about a 7-foot-tall prehistoric caveman. That's all you got to know. Number 1963. The Crawling Hand. An astronaut's hand becomes possessed by some otherworldly forces. And so his hand, I don't know what, goes around killing people. All right, 1964. Oh, this is a scary movie, Ed. Santa Claus Conquers the Martians. This was an important one. Santa Claus and two Earth kids get kidnapped by Martians because Mars needs a Santa Claus. All right, 1965. Monster a Go-Go. Let's see. Monster a Go-Go, an astronaut turned radioactive monster. All right, 1966. Manus, the Hands of Fate. Let's see here. A guy that used to sell fertilizer but actually made the movie, scrounged up cash. It was the worst movie perhaps of all time. But hey, he made the movie. 1967. Valley of the Dolls. You ever heard of Valley of the Dolls?
Nope.
Okay, well, it starred Sharon Tate, Patty Duke, and Susan Hayward. Trio of women who struggle with addiction. And finally, 1968. They saved Hitler's brain. Sounds like it should be awesome, but it was terrible. They had his head mounted on a table. Scenes were added and repackaged. His stupid head only appeared for a few scenes. And it gets on fire at the end.
Oh, what a shame.
All right, that's it. We're going to be back on Monday. Please remember, freedom works.
TAN Clearwater
FM 106.1
WDCF Dade City
FM 102.3
WZHR Zephyr Hills
FM 104.3
Listen.
New guidance. CDC scolded.